Welcome to Day Zero Update for December 22nd, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
Yeah, two-man crew this week, but we have plenty of news to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it is industry news and such. As, you know, last week they announced a bunch of games, so nobody else really needs to announce much.
Nope.
Except for one company, I guess.
Yeah.
That is here. But other than that, we got a bunch of other stuff to talk about. We'll get to that when we can. But first we have to talk about what we are playing, and I'll kick it off here. I've been playing some holiday stuff. There's Astrobot, which had its Winter Wonder level added to it.
Mm-hmm.
Played that, which was a fun level of the sort where they kind of put a bunch of the power-ups that you get throughout the game in there. Not all, mm-hmm. most of them. And a bunch of weird like mascots in there.
Oh yeah.
You get Gex.
Yep. Gex is in there.
Croc is in there because mm-hmm. of course. The one I didn't place was the Worms one because it's
yeah.
in the bot form, it's just like a weird pink thing, and I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Until you get the second additional thing in the gacha machine, and I was like, oh, it's a worm. Does not look like a worm in its normal form.
Mm-hmm.
But once you see the little worms, you're like, oh, okay, I guess I get what. And you get your Spider-Man and Miles Morales
mm-hmm.
In there as well. And that's pretty fun.
Yeah.
So I missed the worms initially because I did not recognize that as like a new thing.
Mm.
That's in the like underground area.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, there's a weird little bots hanging around. Okay, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Did not register as like a new one that I had unlocked. So yeah, I came back and used the 200 coins for the guide, and it was like, oh, this was the thing I was supposed to get. And then I had the last present that was put right in front of the tree there. And yeah, that was a fun. A mix of stuff, though, kind of figuring out, you know, if any of it was useful for other things. Took a bit of work, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because I did not see the time slowing power up there initially, so I saw the one package flying around. I'm like, how the hell do you get that? And it made a lot more sense later on when I came back to it. But yeah, that's a fun level, and I finished up the other speedrun levels. Mm-hmm. We got the rest of the characters there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, caught up on that for the time being.
Mm.
Yeah, let's see. The other holiday stuff, I played Power Wash Simulator. They added a new stage a couple weeks ago that is mm-hmm. a nice rink to clean up,
mm.
Which is fun. Kind of takes place in a similar setting to a lot of the carnival jobs you do earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, it's just kind of an ice rink that has been desecrated by the youth, and then as you're mm-hmm. doing it, cleaning it up, it's got some nice set design and cutesy kind of the polar bear there, a couple penguins, you get a little gnome that's skiing, and some other stuff there that are fun to clean up with. While you're doing it, you're kind of hearing noises like kids vandalizing stuff around, mm-hmm. so. That was a nice little touch there. But yeah, that's fun. And then I played some Digital Eclipse Arcade Jolly Ball. This is a Steam game
mm-hmm.
that was like a handful of like holiday themed games they made a couple years ago that they gave out codes for free to people on their newsletter. Now they're on sale on Steam for about $5 each.
Mm.
Probably a little bit cheaper for the winter sale that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Jolly Ball is basically volleyball, as you might have mm-hmm. been able to guess. But you take control of one of four volleyball players, two on each side. It has options for, you know, playing a quick game up to 7 points or 14 or 21,
mm-hmm.
As well as playing a single game or a set of three, whoever gets to two first. Mm. And I think two difficulties, one called nice and one called naughty. So
mm-hmm.
I managed to beat Both difficulties, after I got the hang of how the game controls, because it takes a little bit, especially since it doesn't directly support the DualSense I put in, so kind of just map things randomly until I use the Steam input to kind of fix that, make it work as it should. So then it was basically two buttons. You got a jump button and a hit the ball button. And the way it works is that kind of your... you know, getting three hits before you have to knock it over. So, you know, your teammates or which you can have up to four people playing locally. You know, you hit the ball once as it's coming back to you, another time to set it up for a spike. And then as you're jumping up to do the spike, you can keep hitting the jump button in the air to kind of power up the shot. And then you get like a stronger shot that can knock out the other player that it's going to hit, or if you try to go for a block on a spike, you can knock it back over. And as you're hitting the ball, the button for hitting the ball, you can kind of do dive moves, that kind of stuff. Not intentionally, it's just more if you're hitting it when you're near it, where it's going to land, it'll go into a dive mode to save it. There's some more depth there than you might expect. For the price that it is, it's a pretty solid game of volleyball, very arcadey and all that. And it's got some nice decoration as you're playing on this snowy volleyball court with a number of elves and Santa watching. You got like a scoreboard keeping track of things. Yeah, it's a fun time for that if you're into arcadey volleyball games, which there's not too much of those these days. But yeah, for other games I've been playing, I was hopping back into Ultros, the Metroid-y game that has a really striking art style that came out early this year. Yeah, just kind of kept playing more of it and kind of finished up what ended up being a run. It is not run-based, but it is essentially a time loop. So you get to a point, I think the goal you have is to... take down different bosses in each loop and ultimately probably taking down God or something. I don't know where it's ultimately leading, but there's a room with statues in it. And after the first loop, one of them breaks and I'm like, okay, so I'm probably taking down a big boss each time and hoping that leads to something bigger. But yeah, that's still a very cool game for what it is. If you're looking for one of those that went under the radar this year. Let's see. The last one I've been playing is just some more Wilmot Works It Out. As I am working my way through that, managed to clear out a number of pieces of puzzles today and make some good progress in that. So still plugging away at that, but that's been pretty much it for me.
Well, as for me, I beat Demon Souls last night. Well, the Demon Souls remake. The previous night I had... finally, after basically three whole days of trying, finally managed to beat the Man-Eaters. And after that, that left only the Penetrator as the last boss before, you know, the final ones were about. And the thing about the Penetrator is he's very intimidating the first couple of times you fight him. But when you realize that because pretty much all of his attacks... you know, like start from the left and then swing down into the right. As long as you are dodging to the left when he attacks you, you're pretty much fine. The only attacks he doesn't have is he has a follow-up attack if the first swipe connects with you that comes from your right, his left. And then, of course, he's also got his thrusting impalement move where he'll, you know, thrust his sword at you and impale you on it. And it takes a huge chunk off of your life. But I just sort of, you know, did it patiently, you know, hit him a couple of times when I thought, you know, he was available, kept my health topped off, and he ended up, I actually ended up falling pretty quickly. So after that, there was the last boss, which was King Alot, and King Alot he's famously considered one of the hardest bosses in the game because his His regular attacks are almost all have like projectile damage that go with them. Like his regular slashes, he also comes with like a projectile that comes with it. So it's not so much a question of trying to dodge away from the attack, but also trying to dodge away from the projectile that he unleashes with it. He also has like this really annoying move where he'll grab you and essentially knock you down a soul level, which basically means he can take away like your the amount of strength you've got if he gets you with it. Ended up going up against him 5 times. I eventually figured out that he is very easy to fight if you manage to catch him when he's getting ready to do his, you know, his area attack. Just run up to him and hit him a couple of times. It'll basically interrupt it. And yeah, I mean, that's it. He's technically not the last boss. There is another boss you fight with him, but that boss is apparent is just so completely pathetic and barely a risk that by that point I was able to get rid of him pretty quickly. And that was the end of the game. Yeah. So I actually managed to beat Demon Souls. Feeling pretty proud of myself. Also, also remembering that, like I said, when I first started playing it, unlike a lot of the games that came after it, Demon Souls is not a very long game. It's just because of the size of its challenge, it feels longer than it actually is. So yeah, I finished that. And during the time period, I decided to take advantage of my PlayStation subscription, and I got Sonic Frontiers. I also got Forspoken as well. I have not touched Forspoken yet, but I have been playing Sonic Frontiers. And it's funny how that game, even on an advanced machine like the PS5, it still shows that the game, it still can't run very solidly. There's, even though, you know, it has issues with like pop up and, you know, sort of like getting kind of choppy animation wise sometimes. But otherwise, you know, as far as like a modern mainline Sonic game goes, it's definitely one of breath of fresh air compared to all the others. The having the sort of whole thing be kind of an open world definitely is a much bigger, it really goes well with the Sonic formula, all things said. That said, though, because it is an open world and it's a Sonic game, that basically means that there's, you know, a whole lot of nothing because he's Sonic and he's got to go fast. So that means there's got to be very little that'll be obstructing him when you're going forward. But they do like add in like some neat little puzzles and some things like that there. And also there's, you know, the regular Sonic levels that you'll occasionally get to. And I also do love like the whole idea of there being like all these sort of big walking bosses that you can encounter just sort of wandering around the place. Kind of gives it a little bit of a modern sheen to it. Yeah, it's fun so far. It definitely, like I said, it does have the graphical issues, and like when it comes to all Sonic games, the platforming does kind of suck, but otherwise pretty fun. But yeah, that's what I've been playing.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news.
Mm-hmm.
And first up, we got some demo news. The recently released Fantasian Neo Dimension finally has a demo. Let me see how much of this is. Yeah, for PS5, Xbox, Switch, and PC, lets you experience the first few hours of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And save data can be carried over, so you can see if you like what they're going to offer and move over to the full game, which mm-hmm. is good. So yeah, if you want to check out the latest and probably last game from not Mistwalker, but Hironobu Sakaguchi.
Mm-hmm.
And a handful of the other crew there that's been Final Fantasy lifers. That's one to mm-hmm. check out. So you can see that. I know there's also one for what's the Silent Hill creators new game?
Mm-hmm. I think it's Slitherhead. Yeah.
that just came out. So
mm-hmm.
some nice ways to check out some games you probably missed
mm.
For that. And yeah, speaking of games that you might have missed or maybe not have put a ton of time into, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
They put out new updates along with addressing some PS5 Pro stuff. They've also put out an update mm-hmm. that adds a fast forward feature for cutscenes.
Mm-hmm.
And not the typical way where it just zips through all the text. It's like a like what you might have for Netflix or YouTube, which allows you to turn it up to 1.5 or 2.0 times speed. So you can kind of get through them more quickly than you may want to wait around for.
Yeah.
Because that game can take a while.
Yeah.
It'd be better to zip through it, especially because there's a lot of people that do that with like podcasts and all the YouTube videos and all that. And it gets a little bit of a psycho vibes at times when they do that for everything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a nice feature to have for this game for the people who like to play through it, but not necessarily have to spend 100 hours.
Yeah, totally.
Let you get more time slashing things and figuring out how you're going to do quests and all that kind of stuff, which is good. It would be nice to have more of that kind of stuff, especially the games that have like fully voice acted and, you know, CG cutscenes and all that.
Yeah.
Because I know that's not as easy as it probably mm-hmm. sounds, especially for the ones that do all that stuff in real time versus video files.
Definitely.
But yeah, it is nice to see.
Oh, definitely. And Miss, you know, we were going back to like Miss Walker. That company has put out some great games, but they have the misfortune of having them come out either on the wrong system or at the wrong time. Like, yeah, for example, their first two like really big games was Lost Odyssey and Blue Dragon.
Yeah.
Both of those games were Xbox originals, and unfortunately, they just did not sell very well, even though they were both really good games.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've kind of struggled financially more or less since then. They did The Last Odyssey, which was, I think that was a Wii exclusive that ended up having to come out again later on. And yeah, they've kind of struggled to like really. I think they did finally get back into the black financially when they put out a couple of those mobile games that did really well. But you know, Sakaguchi, he's kind of you know, it's just he's a brilliant game developer, but he does have kind of off business sense. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah. But yeah, this new one has been getting pretty solid criticism for it. So
yeah,
hopefully that's pretty good.
Yeah,
I'll probably check it out sometime next year when it's on sale.
Yeah.
Just kind of came at the wrong time of the year for offering a, it's probably not a huge RPG, but a sizable one either way.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with Metaphor, ReFantazio, and Final Fantasy VII Rebirth being on there mm-hmm. for a lot of people's, you know, playlists and all that. So
yeah.
Yeah. But there you go. We have another game that has a pretty good update, Tetris Forever.
Mm-hmm.
Added new updates that adds the MS-DOS game Weltris to the collection.
Mm-hmm.
As they talk about it, this is the second game that Alexei Pajitnov made.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, it was sort of him, sort of an early experiment and kind of taking it into like a third dimension, sort of.
Yeah.
Because the idea is that, yeah, the idea is that it's called Weltris.
Yeah. Yeah, Weltris is kind of, as the namesake, kind of hints at it, you're kind of looking down a well of play fields, essentially, like a top-down view of Tetris, and then you have the sides that are also other play fields.
Yeah, like a hole in the ground, basically. And there's like four walls that is surrounding it, and essentially the Tetrominos are falling down sort of the side of those walls, and you're trying to Get them into the little pit in the middle to sort of it's like its name says, it's Tetris, but from like the view of like looking down a well, basically.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a new game that you can check out. They do talk about a bit in the game. As one of the games that he kind of made after Tetris, that was like taking some of the core ideas and trying new things with it.
He actually did a bunch of games after Tetris, and some of them are actually really good. They just never really took off. I believe there actually is like a genuine like 3D variant of Tetris that came out some years later. I think it was like a PlayStation game. I can't remember entirely because I think it was supposed to be like played on like a sphere or something.
Is that Tetrisphere?
Yeah, it was Tetrisphere. Oh, wow. It's right there in the name, isn't it? Yeah. So, like, you know, the idea did evolve from where Alexei originally did it.
Yeah. So, yeah, they definitely tried a bunch of different things. So, along with this, they are adding control remapping in Tetris Time Warp, the new Tetris game that they made as part of this collection.
Yep.
Because that was the most requested feature that people wanted for that. Along with, more control remapping for some of the other games in there. So that's good. And they also mentioned what's next, which is that they are looking at adding more games to the collection. Addressing further feature requests for the Tetris Time Warp. I believe that's one that they're working on adding some more content to it, such that they're hoping to have out early next year. New games, that's on a TBA time scales. They figure out like what they can reasonably get in the game. But yeah, that's cool. That's a collection that people should definitely check out if you like Tetris. So yeah, that'll be cool. People are wanting like the CDI or the best games that system ever got. And it's a unique version. It has some cool music in.
Oh yeah,
yeah. They put that game on a lot of platforms, and that'd be cool to have a bunch of those accessible here.
Definitely.
So yeah, there you go for that. And that's it for the update watch. Though we do have some Nihon Falcom news. First up, that their founder Masayuki Kato died at age 78.
Yeah.
He was the founder, chairman, and former president
of the company.
Passed away on December 15th. That's a long time. It's been around. I've been a part of this company since 1981. So, over 40 years with them. And that is a lot of time. He's done a lot of good work there. Helped keep that company going pretty much up until the point, you know, in the modern day where they gained more fame and recognition for their work. So, yeah, that is sad to see him go, but he's set up the company for success. So, one of those guys. So, yeah. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, Brandon.
No, just kind of sad. I mean, you know, his company has brought us a lot of joy for quite a long time, but you know, everybody has their day, and he did leave a legacy of probably one of the most inventive and dedicated game studios in the industry. So,
yeah, coincidentally, had some news here in the past week. First up, we found out more information on Trails in the Sky First Chapter. They got shown randomly during one of the Nintendo Directs. It'll be coming to PS5, Switch, and PC.
Yeah,
as a simultaneous worldwide release in fall 2025, which is, I think, a first for them.
Yeah, it's a first for them. I don't think they've released like a simultaneous worldwide release before. This will literally be the first. Even, you know, like their most recent Trails games, you know, we only got Trails into Daybreak, like. We got it like several months after the release of the first one. So, yeah, it's a first.
Yeah. So yeah, this is a remake of the first Trails in the Sky game.
Mm-hmm.
The only one of these that I've beaten. So they're lapping me in terms of being able to beat their fucking games.
Mm-hmm.
At this point. But yeah, they say they will have English and Japanese voiceovers, English, Japanese, French, and German subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
So the English, French, and German localizations are brand new.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, they'll have a standard physical edition by Amazon for $59.99. Collector's editions made by Limited Run Games.
Mm-hmm.
Will be available at some later dates. And in Europe, Clear River Games will distribute the physical edition for €59.99. this is basically taking the original game, which is very much a PSP-ass JRPG.
It is a very, it's not just PSP, it's a very old school JRPG, in that it's isometric, it relies on, you know, pre-rendered backgrounds and designs, and has a chibi-esque character models that don't really reflect, you know, the modern ones. So
yeah,
they decided to go back and just sort of remake the whole thing from top to bottom. And that includes like everything from the character graphics. They're probably going to redo, write a new translation. They're also, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they go back and rewrite some of it here and there, just to sort of, you know, to streamline canonicity. And I also, they're pretty much also bringing a lot of changes to the combat system as well. They're adapting a lot of what the more recent Trails games have been doing to this one, including the whole thing that the Trails into Daybreak does, where, you know, it's like a combination between action RPG and turn-based RPG, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, you'll get to enjoy all the antics of Estelle and Joshua and their scumbag father, Cassius. Who just constantly leaves them by themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Despite them being, I think, like 10 to 12 years old during the course of this game.
No, I think they're like around 13 or 14 at that point. I know they're like 10 or 12 when the game starts, but yeah.
It's not a great age to be leaving them by themselves, though.
No.
They do get into the guild that essentially makes them kind of self-sustaining people.
Yeah. And end up getting under the mentorship of the future queen of the Erebonian Empire. So,
yeah.
So
yeah. You get to beat up a bunch of weird ass monsters.
Oh yeah.
Showing some of these screenshots, like, oh yeah, there's the weird plant monster that shoots stuff at you, and giant beetles and all that kind of stuff.
Later on, we'll have the weird hand dragon thing. That's like, it's a hand, but it's made of dragon.
Yeah.
What were these people smoking? I swear. It's called Japanese culture. That's what it is.
Yeah, they're making their own JRPG.
Yep.
So making all kinds of weird monsters.
Yeah. And the fact that it's called First Chapter, I'm guessing this means that it's going to end on one of the most infuriating cliffhangers in gaming history.
Yeah. But at least they got the other ones, because, yeah, the second game is called Second Chapter, so that makes sense that they would call this First Chapter. So in a way, that's, they renamed The Last of Us to Last of Us Part 1 when they did the sequel Part 2.
Yep.
So, yeah. And then there's the third, which I assume will just be Third Chapter. And we'll see how people in 2024 deal with the weird relationship that Estelle and...
Well, I mean, they're not related or anything.
No, but they're very much raised up, at least for a handful of years there, as siblings of a sort.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, plays into, let's say, stereotypes that they have, or tropes that porn has now.
Yeah.
in a way that's like, leans into the way anime fans and all that get into that stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that'll be out next fall at some point.
So
we'll see that at some point.
We'll see.
In the meanwhile, they announced that Ease versus Trails in the Sky Alternative Saga is coming to the West next year for PS5, PS4, Switch, and PC, which is a fighting game, I guess, that they made at some point. Let's see. This launched on PSP in 2010 in Japan, and they never ported to the West for obvious reasons at that point. Yeah, you'll be able to fight with they're using the action system from E7 for this. That's weird gameplay of this, because I was assuming a 2D fighting game, but maybe it's more 3D fighting game.
Yeah.
But yeah. That's something you can check out if you're really into very niche. Who the hell made this?
Definitely up my alley, and this is definitely something that Pat's going to probably be into as well.
Yeah, a company named Refint Games is the one making this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the heck they've made. Maybe just this. I don't know. Google is not telling me much about anything else they made.
Nope.
They're making the PS5, PS4, Switch, and PC versions of this.
So
this might be bringing us to all the new platforms. So
there
you go. That's a weird little thing to check out. Then the last bit of news they announced here is that they are making Ys 10 Proud Nordics. Essentially a, I don't know if it's like a Persona 5 Royal type thing. I think it's more of a successor to X or 10.
Possibly.
They call it a significantly upgraded version of Ys 10 Nordics, featuring a new story, new setting, and numerous new elements.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so maybe, I don't know, this is just, yeah. They say it's a significantly upgraded version of the game, but then saying it's a new story, but maybe it's, they mean like an additional chunk of story to it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're back on the same island, I believe, and all that. So yeah, that could be cool.
Yeah.
I've not played 10 yet.
Mm-hmm.
New bosses, mana ride races, and arena battles. Everything you want in a new JRPG.
Yep.
A bunch of weird side stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. That'll be out sometime in Japan in 2025.
Yep.
So sometime later for everybody else, and no new platforms announced for it. So
yep,
there you go. And yeah, speaking of remasters, Bandai Namco wants to get on that game even more than they've already been for the Tales of games.
Yep.
As they've said, they are planning to release more remasters of the series after Tales of Graces F Remastered is coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a consistent line of remastered works from the series producer, so yeah.
Part of that's because a lot of them, at least in the West, have had a very inconsistent release over like a bunch of different platforms, and you know, they kind of want to make them easier and more easy to get a hold of, you know, without having to resort to piracy, because like a bunch of them, like there was one for the GameCube, there was one for the GBA, and then they went over to PS2 and 3, and it was just kind of all over the place.
Yeah, I believe they started on the PS1.
Yeah. Well, no, the very first one was a Famicom game. Super Famicom.
Tales of Phantasia.
Yeah, that was a Super Famicom game.
Yeah, GBA in the West.
Yep.
Also PlayStation, so yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of went the traditional lineage there of Super Nintendo to PS1 to GBA.
Yep.
And then Tales of Destiny was on the PS1 and a PS2 eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Then Eternia, then Destiny 2, and then this is like a yearly release schedule here.
Mm-hmm.
Destiny 2 was 2002, Symphonia 2003, Rebirth 2004, Tales of Legendia and Tales of the Abyss 2005, 2006 was Tales of the Tempest.
Yeah.
2007, Tales of Innocence. 2008 was Tales of Symphonia, Dawn of the New World for the Wii, Tales of Vesperia and Tales of Hearts, and then Tales of Graces in 2009, and then they took a break for a year and then did Tales of Xillia and Xillia 2 in 2011 and 2012. Took another break for 2 years and came back in 2015 with Tales of Zestiria. 2016 was Tales of Berseria, and then they took 4 years off and made Tales of Arise.
Yep.
If you thought Final Fantasy got a lot of games, Tales beats them out pretty good.
Yep.
Especially in the consistency there. And yeah, they've been doing a lot of remasters of varying qualities. But yeah, I think a lot of those games are stuck on like the PS3 of sorts, like the PS3 and PS2 and PS1 era consoles, and not as easily playable these days. So other than just doing, let's say, some basic remasters and putting them up for like the PlayStation Plus Premium, it makes sense that they're going to do some more stuff with them. And cool. Do the exact same thing they did, you know, 10, 15 years ago and just flood them.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be great for the Tales of fans and confusing for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a tradition for the series. So that's about more of the same there. But yeah, they do have Tales of Graces F remastered coming to PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC January 17th. So a few weeks away for that. So yeah, there's that. We do have some Borderlands 4 news. And that since that most recent trailer, people have been wondering, like, how's the writing going to be? Considering that was kind of the probably the worst aspect of Borderlands 3.
Yeah, especially compared to 2. 2, part of the reason 2 was so acclaimed was because the writing was such a massive step up from the first game.
Yeah. Didn't help that the third game seemed like the story was written like 5 years earlier.
Yeah, and it also basically like it just, unlike in the second game where there's like this very like build up and then there's like a really solid resolute conclusion, the third game it just kind of ends.
Yeah, and it's like, I feel like I was listening to Jeff Gerstmann's podcast and he very much made some good points that the original game had, it didn't have like great writing, but it had good enough writing that made jokes and didn't necessarily rely solely on memes for its
joke. it had character.
Yeah, like the characters had character, and then they're like, now you'll never get to play as those people again. They'll just be side characters that you see every so often.
Mm-hmm.
Or two in the spinoff and all that. And yeah, kind of just make characters that are all just kind of weird and not characters, and then you're just dealing with, you know, Tiny Tina and Handsome Jack and these other characters that are all very much specific, like tropes, essentially. Tiny Tina is very much the...
Well, Manic Pixie, if she was also, like, you know, more manic than Pixie.
Yeah.
In that she's a genuine, absolute psychopath.
Yeah. And yeah, like 3, it was like, hey, what if the villains are just asshole streamers?
You know, yep.
Influencers, essentially. And it's like, I guess, but they didn't really do anything with them that's made them interesting. They're just yelling, you know, streamer memes.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't a bad idea. Like, you could totally do that, and they could have been interesting characters. It just... They didn't really. They just kind of.
It's like, just let me kill him so I can stop listening to him. So, yeah, with Borderlands 4 on the way, there's very much a lot of questions about the writing and all that. And yeah, the narrative director, Sam Winkler, has been posting on Twitter. Mm-hmm. They're saying, like, Borderlands 4 is our most ambitious game yet. In service of that, I'm happy to say I've gotten to work with some of the funniest people I know as contract writers. Those writers, including Xavier Nelson Jr. of Strange Scaffold, who's done a lot of funny and weird story stuff.
Oh, yeah.
As well as some others. But yeah, has talked about the meme stuff, saying I'm not at liberty to talk much about the content of BL4. Mm-hmm. Remain firm my criticism of BL3. BL3's overabundance of toilet humor.
Mm-hmm.
In response to fans, and also saying, I'm not going to say there's no toilets, but if the word skibbity ships in the game under my watch, I'm going to cry real tears. Also added, Paul Tassi joked that we were going to have a gun called Hawk 2A, and a fellow dev asked me if it was real, and I wanted to put my hand down the sink grinder.
Yeah.
So very much addressing, like, are you just going to reference, like, current memes? And he's like, basically saying, like, no, we're going to avoid that as much as we can. But still saying there's going to be, you know, gross and jokes and potentially like bad puns and all that kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Saying there's a difference between funny bad and nails on a chalkboard bad. So we'll see how that goes, but that's at least a good attitude to have going into this.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to be more actually humorous.
Yeah.
Even if it's not super funny, but at least like getting some solid writing out of it versus just yelling jokes at people.
Yeah. See, Borderlands 2 could legitimately very, very funny. Like there were legitimately laugh out loud moments in it. Not so much Borderlands 3.
Yeah.
Like Borderlands 3 was still an entertaining game, but like, yeah, it's just you, there was a lot of stuff for it that just, it did not work.
Yeah. So yeah, they seem to have the right aims for the writing part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that goes. And yeah, speaking of developers who've had their games criticized in the wake of the Game Awards, Catley has been one of those.
Yep.
As people have been trying to figure out, like, is this an AI game? Is this, what's going on with this? And have made a lot of accusations and such at the developers, not for there being no smoke to any of it, because, like, that trailer just very much had the vibe of a lot of AI video that people have been putting out lately.
Yeah.
Especially if you look at, like, say, the holiday commercial for Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of a weird, bad use of AI.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and not being much in the way of details on this and looking at the Steam page, which looks like it's written by generative AI text, kind of stuff that's not detail-oriented, just like talking about how cute the game is and all that. And so, yeah, people have been digging into the business profiles of the developers, Super Authenti, and its executives and their history, which unsurprisingly, they have history of working on blockchain stuff.
But
not at this developer, this form of their develop, this company that they're on right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they've said as much as it's not a blockchain game. There are no NFTs in it or other blockchain currency affiliated with the product.
Mm-hmm.
They put out a gameplay trailer. I don't think it's linked, but they put out like a more of a gameplay thing that is a bit rough around the edges, and I would see why you may not want to make that your trailer you're spending a lot of money on to put in the Game Awards, but you know, some of that would have probably helped make it seem less like an AI fever dream. And saying that they did not use generative AI to produce the game or the video, which, yeah, like the trailer is pretty smooth in the way it's produced. In a way that does not look like generative AI. Eyes that a lot of the cats have and all that don't do it any favors. So yeah, that's just, yeah. Mm. I see why the accusations are there. The hostility is maybe not necessarily warranted, but I'd definitely look up that gameplay video. I don't think they have it linked in this article, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a game in a bit of a rough state there that makes sense for what it is. But yeah, that's people are still getting weird and hostile about it, which is, you know, still not warranted, but still worth, you know, double checking things.
Mm-hmm.
There's your update on Catley. Mm-hmm. Seems to be a real game, but they have not shown it off in a way that makes it you know, confident that it is, you know, still a real. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, in the wake of the Game Awards, Velatro got a bunch of awards and then had to deal with the weirdness of the PEGI rating system giving it an 18+ rating.
Yeah.
That is used for essentially saying that it is deemed adults only as a, yeah, let's see. I'm trying to see if they have the complete description of the 18+ thing. I think it's for like simulated gambling kind of thing, which if you played that game, there's no gambling in it. You're playing poker, which can have a gambling aspect to it, but this game have any sort of gamble in it, especially not like any real world gambling. It's very, ridiculous simulation of poker in a way. And yeah, it has annoyed the developer Local Funk, who has questioned why it's been deemed adults only when other titles that feature actual in-game spending and randomized, loot boxes and such are considered suitable for children. Saying here on his Twitter post, since Peggy gave us an 18 plus rating for having evil playing cards, maybe I should add microtransactions, loot boxes, and real gambling to lower that rating to 3+, like EA Sports FC.
Yeah, he's showing the very obvious hypocrisy here.
And has had further conversations with Peggy about this and has come to the conclusion that this is all just political, that it's essentially just up to the whims of the people at the ratings board. As he says here, just to clear it up, I'm way more irked at the 3+ rating for these games with actual gambling mechanics for children than I am about Balatro having an 18+ rating. If these other games were rated properly, I'd happily accept the weirdo 18+. The red logo looks kind of dope. Peggy, let me see. They got a Peggy page for this. This game has received a Peggy 18, which restricts availability to adults only and is not suitable for persons under 18 years of age. This rating has been given because it features prominent gambling imagery. Which is like, what is gambling? Is it cards? Like actual cards?
Because it's like based on like video poker machines, even though there is no like actual financial payout.
And like you win chips, which is their form of currency, but you don't use it for anything. It's just a score. And it says like this game teaches by way of images, information, and gameplay skills and knowledge that are used in poker. During gameplay, the player is rewarded with chips for playing certain hands. The player is able to access a list of poker na hand names. As the player hovers over these poker hands, the game explains what type of cards the player would need in order to play certain hands. As the game goes on, the player becomes increasingly familiar with which hands would earn more points. Because these are hands that exist in the real world, this knowledge and skill could be transferred to a real-life game of poker. And it's like, boy, that is sure that's not wrong, but also, so what?
Yeah, it's
Like
like
a lot of
that's
kids learn how to play poker, but they don't ever gamble as part of that.
I know how to play poker, and I learned how to do that when I was in middle school. Like,
And guess what was big when we were kids? The
yeah.
World Series of Poker.
Yep.
So yeah. And yeah, he's been critical of how they've, handed the EA Sports FC games a 3+ rating despite the hooks they have for, loot chests and all that kind of stuff that should escalate it up to a higher rating. But yeah, it's kind of an unfortunate aspect of their rating system that seems to be mostly political in the way, or arbitrary, essentially. For him being an indie developer, doesn't have much pushback that he can do. He can just sort of contact them and complain them, but not much else they can do versus an EA or a 2K or somebody that can, probably be a little more forceful about their ratings they're getting. Obviously, Local Thunk has made it clear that he hates the thought of Balatro becoming a real gambling game and very much has created a will for himself that stipulates the IP may never be sold or licensed to any gambling companies or casinos. So he's very much fought against that sort of view of his game. Weird situation around. So yeah, there you go. But yeah, speaking of EA games, EA Sports games, EA Sports College Football 25 has managed to reach a cool milestone. It is the best-selling sports game ever in the US. The long delay in releases has paid off pretty well for them as they are essentially soft barred from being able to make new games without doing a bunch of licensing work. And then with the recent creation of the NIL system for licensing out players' name, image, and likeness. That has made it much easier for them to be able to bring in real players and kind of push out the NCAA from all of it, because they're just a corrupt organization that has kind of screwed over EA as a partner and all of that. So, yeah, they kind of made their own game. Signed all the teams, signed all the players, the vast majority of them, and put them in a game, and now that is the best-selling game, sports game in the U.S. history. And meanwhile, they've done the same thing essentially with the their football games, getting rid of the FIFA license, which they seem to be charging them increasingly more and more ridiculous amounts of money.
Mm-hmm.
And now EA gets the vast majority of that money. So yeah, it's not a great time to be a shitty, corrupt head of a sports organization like that.
Yeah.
Especially when you don't own the teams involved, which is definitely the weakness of FIFA and NCAA. Mm.
Is
they're all just rules organizations. And when they become corrupt, you can just go around them.
Yep.
And get everything but their name that nobody likes anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that is cool news. Hopefully they continue to work on that and make those games better in the future. So yeah, looking forward to that. But yeah, we have some news on the Sony potential acquisition of Kadokawa.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like instead of doing that, they have come to an agreement that gets Sony the largest, Sony will become the largest shareholder in Kadokawa Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially will be using that as part of their new partnership they are entering into with the company. They've kind of already had one as of a few years ago, but they are kind of now the largest shareholder and kind of using that as a means for getting more deals for, you know, strategic deals between their, you know, anime and manga production houses, and for turning those into series and live action movies and all sorts of, that seems like their main goal at this point. Whatever they're hoping to avoid in terms of other companies potentially doing hostile takeovers, at least no longer being in the works at this point. So yeah, Sony has spent about $318.5 million or 50 billion yen to acquire just over 12 million shares to get them 10% of the company, or at least 10% of the shares. They also own 14.09% stake in From Software. So they're making money left and right as a result of this, off of anything they do. Yeah, as I say here, in the future, the two companies plan to discuss specific initiatives for collaboration, such as initiatives to adapt Kadokawa's IP into live-action films and TV dramas globally, co-produce anime works, expand global distribution of Kadokawa's anime works through the Sony Group, further expanding publishing of Kadokawa's games, and develop human resources to promote and expand.
Yeah.
So basically help them become a bigger company, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And get their stuff out there to more people.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't hurt, because they're a corporation that owns a bunch of stuff that you may not know the parent corporation versus their various entities that they own.
Mm-hmm.
For that. So, yeah, that'll be cool to see. And now people can be less scared that Sony's going to own From Software and make all their games exclusive to PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't think was going to happen either way. I imagine Sony would like to keep making money off of people on the other platforms.
Mm-hmm.
For those Souls games and such. But hey, they'll make even more money off of Elden Ring Nightreign when that comes out next year. So that's good for their bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Nope.
More business stuff happening.
Yeah.
And speaking of business stuff, we have some unfortunate news here. 11-Bit Studios, makers of Frostpunk and Frostpunk 2 and various indie games and various publishing. They've announced they are laying off. I don't know that they have a specific amount of people here. Laying off a bunch of people as a result of them shutting down the unannounced title codenamed Project 8.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like this was a console-focused game they were working on that began in 2018 when, as they say, narrative-driven, story-rich games held stronger appeal. 11-Bit had spent $48.4 million I don't want this, PLN. I don't know what Polish, I assume a Polish currency, about $11.8 million on the project as of September 2024. At that point, 37 team members were attached to the project. They say half of the Project 8 workforce will be given the chance to transition to existing teams or as yet announced initiatives. One of those highly promising teams is working on the 2025 survival game, The Alters. That has a demo out there if you want to check that out. But yeah, so it may be, you know, potentially leaving depending on if they are going to move over to one of their other teams or if they are not a fit for that, maybe getting laid off. That's a shame for a project like that to get canceled, but it, the way they talked about it here, it seems like it just did not become a cohesive project that seemed like turned out to be something good. So they ended up canceling it, losing out on a bunch of money they spent on it. Though $11 million is nothing for what you hear about the average publisher losing when they cancel projects. But yeah, 11-Bit Studios is on the small side. So that is probably still a big deal for them. But yeah, luckily they've got Frostpunk 2, which just came out on PC and has been doing pretty well.
Yep.
Will be coming to the consoles, PS5 and Xbox here sometime next year. So if that goes well, yeah, they're a very cool company. They make a bunch of cool games and would be a shame to see them shut down for any reason. But it seems like they're doing all right for the time being. So hopefully this is a minor issue for them for the foreseeable future for that. And then the last one here, a developer that I don't think we've heard much of in a while, Hothead Games, has announced that they are shutting down after 18 years.
Yeah, they've been around a while, but we haven't really heard like a peep from them in some time.
Yeah, that's because I was looking this up, what the games they've been working on, and yeah, they started off on the big time with the Penny Arcade Adventures games, the first two episodes. They worked on Deathspank 1, 2, and 3. Swarm, which was a neat little indie game. But then, you know, kind of the returns on that stuff kind of just did not go very far for them. So they turned to the mobile game scene and made a bunch of games in that realm. That's been basically what they've been doing ever since. Putting out, you know, a couple of games every each of sports games. A lot of stuff. A game called Killshot. It was like a first-person shooter, making sequels of that, and various sports games and tycoon games and such. It seems like the returns on that stuff just kind of kept going, not going as far as they could go, and nothing really stuck for them, as they say here. Ian Wilkinson, head of the studio, president, CEO, saying, "We threw all kinds of small, inexpensive games at the wall to see what stuck. Surprise, 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 nothing stuck." So we went back to our roots and created sports games under the Big Win brand and shooting games under the Rivals at War brand and eventually the Killshot brand. A series of games were very successful. We finally discovered Lightning in a Bottle. It was the most successful years for Hothead. Unfortunately, it took far longer than we expected to secure contracts for the new, they had a big potential AAA project that they're hoping to secure contracts to bring those games, bring that project to mobile, PC, and console, but the process took longer than expected, and essentially they were both ready to close 2 weeks ago, and then the mobile publisher pulled out due to a change in strategy. 2 weeks later, the console publisher also pulled out. At that point, our only remaining option was bankruptcy. And so you're saying that on their legacy, Hothead was chock full of incredibly smart, talented, loyal, hardworking, but mostly just really nice people. People that had your back at work and outside of work. Many of us made lifelong friends at Hothead. Saying we grew up together, we laughed, we cried, we celebrated, we grieved, we found partners, we started families. I had the privilege of working with so many wonderful people at Hothead over the years. Hopefully, this won't be the last time you hear from us. We still believe we are destined to work together again and continue to do great things. But even if that doesn't happen, I'm a better person for working at Hothead, and I consider myself blessed to have spent 16 years shoulder to shoulder with my fellow Hotheads. So that seemed like one of those teams that really enjoyed working together, but the financials of the industry just kind of caught up with them at a certain point.
Yeah, eventually. Can only do this stuff so long.
Yeah, if you're not getting those hits, it's only a matter of time. And that seems to be what happened with Hothead Games. They made a lot of cool stuff early on, pivoted to mobile where they found some success, and then trying to get back into console and PC development, that just did not go well for them.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, we say goodbye to them and wish them all the best. So yeah, sad news. But yeah, that is I think it's going to be it for the show this week. Thank you, Brandon, for joining.
Always.
We'll be back, technically not next week. We'll be doing a Game of the Year show that'll go up on New Year's Day, around when we post the site-wide Game of the Year list. So yeah, we'll be recording that next Sunday and then posting it on Wednesday, so you can stay tuned for that. But we'll be back for a regular show on the 5th of January in the new year, as we look forward to games that are coming out, and they'll be coming out pretty quickly after a good bit of games coming out in January of note. So we'll talk about that stuff when we get there. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. And if you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know, and select strangers that are also ready for this year to end, and hopefully we have a better industry of keeping people's jobs. So we're not going to expect that to remain true, but yeah, it seems like a couple tens of thousands of people lost their jobs this year, unfortunately, especially even here in the final stretch of 2024, where people get their notices that they've been fired or laid off right before Christmas and New Year's as they deal with all of that fun stuff. So yeah, we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead, and end of the new year, or end of the year and beginning of the new year before we return. So yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good couple of weeks there, and we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.